direct from the Los Angeles Underground. Open your ear holes for The Superiority Complex, a Guano production.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Superiority Complex. I have a wonderful show in store for you today. I'm very, very excited. I'm so excited I could not sleep. Had to get up early to get this show posted for you guys. A little bit of background. I know some of you guys are down on Twitter, but yesterday I got some great news via Twitter from our friend H.P. Salas. He's a fan of the show, good friend of mine. One of the guys who supported the show from the very, very beginning. He's helped spread the word and has been very, very good about letting people know about certain episodes, episodes he likes. He interacts with us on Twitter all the time. So he's been a really great supporter of the show. So I want to say thanks. And I especially want to thank him because yesterday he let us know via Twitter that Mark Langill, who is the team historian for the Los Angeles Dodgers, would be speaking at my local library. And when I say local library, I mean a library a block from my house. So I decided, well, I'm going to head down there. I will, on the off chance that I get a chance to speak to him, I'm going to take my recorder with me. Lo and behold, there was room. I didn't have a ticket to get in. But there was room. About 100 people showed up to hear Mr. Langill speak. And he told really, really great stories of working for the Dodgers and the type of people that he interacts with, the type of people that would need a team historian, and just gave really, really great background into working for the Dodgers. So he spoke for about an hour, did a Q&A, gave away some really great prizes. I didn't get a prize, but everyone was handed an envelope, and he revealed later that there were 5 signed Wes Parker cards in some of those envelopes, and I was lucky enough I am now the proud owner of a signed Wes Parker card. So that, to me, was if that had been the only thing that happened yesterday, would have been a fantastic day. But as I will reveal in a minute, it got even better. Mr. Langill's book is called The Game of My Life, and I was up late because I was reading some of it. Really, really great book. It's basically memoirs of different people within the Dodger organization, from Vin Scully and Tommy Lasorda down to people like Steve Garvey, Don Drysdale. And basic question is, what game do you remember the most, or what was the most important game you ever participated in? And it gives you a nice little background on each of the players. And it tells you a little bit about where they were when the game took place, and you know what the circumstances were, whether it was a playoff game it's a fascinating read. Even if you're not a Dodgers fan, if you're just a baseball fan, I would recommend picking this game up. And Mark was nice enough to sign copies for everybody. Really, really great. When it came my time to sign the book, I asked him very sheepishly if he would be kind enough to answer a few questions for a podcast. And he revealed that he does listen to podcasts. He has certain podcasts he likes to listen to. He looked me in the eye and said, I would be more than happy to. And I was shocked and amazed, and I sat and waited for him to finish signing books. He was very gracious to everybody that came up, and it was one of those situations where everybody has a story about the Dodgers, and everybody wanted to share that story, and Mark was so patient with everybody and was very, very kind and engaging. So I was very, very impressed as I was sitting there with his bedside manner, if you will, with just listening to these Dodgers fans and taking, you know, all of their stories in and really, really engaging them. As you guys know, I've been a huge Dodgers fan my whole life. Grew up going to the games, my earliest memories are, you know, of Fernando Mania. My earliest memory goes back to, I believe it was the 77 World Series and the Dodgers losing. And my brother Frank, who you've heard on this podcast before, My brother, I was in kindergarten, and my brother Frank was in, he was a senior at the time, would have been a senior. And I remember looking up after the Dodgers lost the final game, and my brother crying. My brother had tears in his eyes, tears of frustration, because the Dodgers had been there the year before and didn't win. And then I remember looking up and seeing him cry. So that made me cry. And my joke is always that since 1977, there have only been 2 years for me that have not ended in tears. That would be 81 and 88, of course. But I really remember going to the stadium as a kid with my cousins, my grandmother taking us all to the games. All of my cousins, we would just pile into this, you know, just station wagon and head down to Dodger Stadium. My grandma's green station wagon, we'd all pile in there with my cousins Margaret, Rosemary, Bernadette, my Aunt Virginia, my Uncle Reuben, who now says he roots for the Angels, which leaves me scratching my head. But, you know, going in and just seeing Fernando pitch. Fernando got me out of my only day when I was a kid. My mother, if you were sick, if you claimed to be sick, that was the only way she would let you stay home from school if you were sick, was if you went to the doctor and you got a shot. So that was the only time as a kid that if you were sick, that's what was going to happen. If you took a day off from school, you were going to go get a shot. So imagine my surprise in 1981 when I woke up to go to school one day and my mother came in and said, "You're not going to school today." And my first thought was, "I wonder who died," because that was the only day that was the only way you weren't going to school if you weren't sick, is if somebody had a funeral during the week. One of our relatives had passed away, like one of my mom's, one of our older relatives had passed away. That was the only time you got out of going to school if you weren't sick. And I said, "Who died?" And my mom said, "Nobody died. We're going to go see the parade. We're going to go see Fernando Valenzuela." So we went to see the victory parade, the Dodgers victory parade. And I remember standing on the steps of City Hall and listening to all the Dodgers speak. I remember hearing, Tommy Lasorda and Fernando spoke in Spanish. It was really, really great. So I have that vivid memory. And then, of course, a few years later, I would be able to ditch school and go see the Dodgers parade in 88, which is, of course, sadly, and as Angel fans like to remind me, and Giants fans, the last time the Dodgers won. But what a great World Series, of course. Kirk Gibson's home run. I was on the phone with my best friend Hiddish doing homework for Mr. Kelly's English class in our senior year when Gibson hit that fateful home run. I remember hearing my dad whooping it up in the living room. I remember hearing Hiddish dropping the phone. I went out. My dad and I hugged. We high-fived. I ran back to the phone. I could still hear Hiddish. He had dropped the phone and was just screaming and screaming like crazy because Gibson hit that home run. I have a lot of great memories, like I said, tied to the Dodgers. I remember hearing Vin Scully as a kid working at the Corn Stand. We talked about the Corn Stand last week on the Family Reunion episode. Hearing Vin Scully and Jaime Harin, because my uncle would sometimes tune in Spanish, and we would listen to the Dodger games, in the work while working at the Corn Stand. So every time I hear Vin Scully now, it automatically puts me back to those days of the Corn. And now years later, being able to drive on my own and going to the games with my buddies and hanging out and just going to see those teams of the early 90s. You know, when we had the five rookies of the year in a row, seeing those guys. And those were great memories as I was growing up. And then as I got older, introducing my wife and my daughter to the Dodgers, my daughter now, she knows, she told her mother-in-law. My mother-in-law said, asked her the other day, "Do you even know who Vin Scully is?" And she said, "Well, of course, Grandma, he's the voice of the Dodgers." So having a 9-year-old who knows that, just fills me with pride. And of course, you know, some of my best friends, some of my closest friends are Dodger fans. So we all carry that with us. And so it was very, very special to me to be able to talk to Mr. Langell, talk to someone in this organization that I grew up admiring. So, like I said, lo and behold, you know, he agreed to talk to me. And I was so, it was a pleasant surprise. Just because not, again, he couldn't have been more gracious. But the fact that he said, yeah, sure, I'll listen, without even batting an eye, I would love to do an interview for your podcast. So it was really, really great to have him agree to that. And I am going to get to that interview in a minute. I let Mr. Langell know that I've been trying to put a panel discussion together, and I had been trying. I had talked to HB Salas and our friend Robert Carlos. I was trying to look into getting a way to get my friend Hiddish on the line from the Bay Area where he lives now, trying to record some kind of a phone interview or Skype interview. But it just, things have not fallen into place. And I let Mr. Langell know I want to do this panel discussion. And my original intent last night when I talked to him was to have this be sort of the grand finale of this panel discussion we were going to do. But the more and more I thought about it, the Dodgers are in the middle of this incredible hot streak. Who knows how long it will last? Of course, nothing is ever set in stone where baseball is concerned. So I decided, well, I'm just going to do this as a standalone episode, and hopefully I'll get that panel discussion together. My brothers have a lot of great stories about going to the Dodger games, you know, in the 60s, which was before my time. But I wanted to get them on here and get my cousin John, who we just went to a game on Tuesday. Unfortunately, they lost, but John and Peter and I, my two cousins, as I said, we used to go all the time as kids, and we were able to go to a game on Tuesday. Unfortunately, the Dodgers dropped one to the Cubs. But, you know, they're playing a little bit more down to earth now, but they're in the middle of, they just ended this incredible run where they were breaking all of these really, really obscure records. And so I just thought, well, if I sit on this any longer, if I sit on this interview, it's really not going to, the interview, not that it wouldn't hold up as well, but it's sort of topical now because the Dodgers are in the middle of this great run. So with apologies to Mr. Langell, who, you know, I don't want him to think I was trying to deceive him in any way, but I did mention that I was trying to put a panel show together, but it was such a great interview and he was so gracious. I could not wait any longer. So without further ado, Mr. Langell, like I said, stepped away from after he was all done signing books. He said, okay, let's do our interview. And we stepped outside. We did it on the steps of the library. It was a warm night in August here. And it felt like a night would feel kind of at Chavez Ravine. The air was a little bit still. And Mr. Langell was so gracious. I meant only to take up a few minutes of his time. Ended up talking to me for about 20 minutes. We covered a variety of topics about the Dodgers and his job as a team historian. So without further ado, and with many thanks to Mr. Langell, I now give you his interview. So please, guys, follow us on Twitter. You never know what could happen. At Soup Complex, S-O-U-P Complex. Drop us a line, superioritycomplexshow@gmail.com. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/soupcomplex. Now, before I drop the interview on you, Mr. Langell gave me a couple of extra copies of the book he worked on. It's the Dodger Stadium 50th Anniversary. It's sort of a scrapbook. It's a hardcover scrapbook with lots and lots of pictures and information about Dodger Stadium. Of course, Dodger Stadium celebrated its 50th anniversary a few years ago. Mr. Langell worked on that book. So he gave me a couple of extra copies. One is going to go to, one is going to go to my friend HB Salas, for, you know, hooking me up with the information, but I have an extra copy. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to use Mr. Langell's book. Hopefully you will buy the book. But I'm pretty sure that you can get this information on via the internet. So the way I'm going to do it is if you post this answer on our Facebook page, I will put a picture of Mr. Langell up on the show page today, and it'll say today's guest and do all that. Under that picture, I want you to answer the following trivia question. And that trivia question is, and you can use Mr. Langell's book to answer the question, or you can Google it. But the way I'll do it is I will pick an answer at random from the answers given to me. That way you don't have to figure out, oh, well, it's the first person, second person, whatever. Just put it up. I will pick a number at random. I'll put everybody's number in a hat, and I'll draw one, and I promise it'll be fair and square. Maybe I'll have the kid do it. And what we'll do is we will send the winner a copy of this book, courtesy of Mr. Langill. And the trivia question is, what number did Vin Scully wear at Fordham University? What number did Vin Scully wear when he played baseball at Fordham University? So, again, drop the answer on our Facebook page. All right, guys? Without further ado, here is Mark Langill, team historian of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Enjoy. I am here, standing here on the steps of the Whittier Public Library, the Whitwood Branch, with Mark Langill, who is the he's the team historian for the Los Angeles Dodgers. For me, this is second only to meeting Vin Scully. This is probably, you have probably the job I envy the most in the world. So you spoke about it during your lecture tonight. How did you come about becoming the team historian? If you don't mind giving the nutshell story to that, Mark.
Well, I tell people, you wonder how you become a team historian, and I say it's very easy. If you don't hit the ball in a little league, that's what happens when you don't hit the ball. And actually, my background is writing, and I was a beat writer for the Pasadena Star News. I grew up as a kid, even though I wasn't very good at baseball. I always loved the atmosphere. I loved listening to Vin Scully, and I'd read the stories in the newspaper and this magical place called Dodger Town in Vero Beach, and I always wondered what that was like. And as I grew up, I had a writing background. And so one of the things that I wanted to do was become a Dodger beat writer. So after Pasadena City College and Cal State Northridge, I became a beat writer. For 6 years, I covered the team. And then 1994, I joined the team putting the publications together. And then 2002, after a couple ownership changes, they said, you know, you seem to know all this miscellaneous stuff, and we're getting a whole lot of miscellaneous phone calls. Why don't we just kind of give all this to you and call you the team historian? And that's really how it happened. Miscellaneous phone calls have just turned into the most wonderful last 10 years because it could be something from last week. It could be last season. It could be 20 years ago. It could be Brooklyn. It could be the minor leagues. You just absolutely never know. So that's what I like about it. It's something new every day.
So, Mark, did you just have a mind where that sort of baseball trivia just stuck in there? Because you did something pretty impressive during your lecture where you named every year just – right off the top of your head, every year where the Dodgers had made... Good night everyone. You were able to name every year the Dodgers made the playoffs. Now, did you just have a brain where that just... Is that the type of mind you have that those numbers stick in your head?
I think my teachers would say, no matter what level of education I was at, you remember what you want to remember.
And that is very true.
And when I was a kid, I had a history book about the Dodgers, and it was fascinating to me. And you just learn these magical years because these are the ones that are celebrated. So as of when I was in second grade, you suddenly know that these are special years, 1916, 1920, 1941, 47, 49, 52, 53, 55, 56, 59, 63, 65, 66, 74, 77, 78, and then later in life, 81 and 88. Those are the years that are celebrated. And if you notice, sports teams and things like that, you can have a really good season, but you don't really have reunions of teams that almost make it. You know, they don't make docudramas of a hockey team that finished second to the Russians in 1980 or anything as far as an Olympics and things like that. If it's a special championship, that usually means just like the Jets in Super Bowl III, or if it's a famous college team, whether it's Miami Hurricanes of Howard Schnellenberger fame or Phi Sigma Jamma being defeated by Jim Valvano and NC State, these championships are always celebrated, not just in the moment, but people love to reminisce. And so those I knew, a pennant winning year or a championship year, those are the magic numbers.
That's fantastic. Now, what is your earliest Dodger memory?
My first memory is actually my very first game, July the 15th, 1972, box seats, aisle 44, row M, seat 1. And it's not that I remember the location necessarily. Fortunately, they saved the ticket in my baby book. It was Dodgers versus Expos. And the funny thing about baby books and things like that, I found out that I was born the home opener in 1965. And it wasn't opening day, it was the home opener. And I looked up something in the reference book one time in the back. Well, son of a gun, I was born on opening day. It was kind of strange because you see, you know, Yankee Doodle Dandy and born on the 4th of July mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And, you know, whether it was a sign or not, you know, that you're born on opening day for the local team in a year that they happen to win the championship. I thought that was always cool. I was born in 65. I just thought that was neat that they won the World Series that I, the year I was born. For the longest time, I thought I was a national anthem baby. I was born at 6. I was born at 6:59, and I thought, oh, I was born during the anthem. Cool. Turns out the game started at 8 back then, so I was a batting practice baby.
There you go, batting practice.
but it's fun. It's fun to put the dates together. As I've always been interested in the stories, the pageantry, and everything like that. And I'm just very fortunate to have been able to be in a position where at work I can use these boyhood memories and the stuff that I read about as a kid to apply it as an adult, not only help the coworkers, not only help the fans, but hopefully help the organization as well in terms of helping everyone remember a bicoastal history and one that dates back entering the National League way back to 1890.
Your background wasn't in history. Your background was in journalism. Do you feel a certain pressure, or do you feel a certain I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Do you feel that you have a certain obligation as the team historian? Do you feel like that makes you do your job a little, dig a little deeper, work a little harder to get these facts and make sure that everything's because you brought up an interesting story earlier about the Rick Monday bobblehead and the date being incorrect. I'm going to have to go home. I got that bobblehead at home. So do you feel a certain set of obligation now? Do you feel like you really need to double check and triple check everything?
I don't necessarily think it's obligation because when you're a reporter and you have that background, you do that naturally anyway. And mm-hmm. so we're trained at an early age to always double check, never take anything for granted like that. As far as the Dodger history, I'm just kind of like the park ranger at Yosemite. I can't take credit for Jackie Robinson. I can't take credit for all the championships. I can't take credit for Vin Scully. I can't take credit for Think Blue, Big Blue Wrecking Crew, and things like that. But I'm very respectful of it, and I'm very appreciative of it. And so I'm not the type to give my opinions as far as why this happened or why that happened, mm-hmm. because when you're a lousy player in Little League, you learn that you leave the technical stuff for the experts,
sure.
as far as why a breaking ball isn't working or why a guy is not pitching, things like that. I mean, I have great respect for the guys that play, and even if you see an average that's not the greatest of numbers, you still know that they're an elite player. And so I never had to worry about trying to technically figure out how they're throwing the curve or how they're playing the game, because I certainly didn't know it in Little League. And so as an adult, it's easier to worry about the stories, the records, the rosters, the numbers, and things like that, because I certainly can't get into a technical discussion with anyone. And I leave that to the players anyway. If somebody says, oh, is so-and-so a Hall of Famer? If they're somebody from the 1950s or 60s, I think you should always talk to their teammates, talk to their opponents. They're the ones that played with them. They're the ones that would have the vote. So many pundits now look at numbers and they'll argue if somebody's a Hall of Famer and things like that. I just don't think you can do that based on numbers because people are human.
A good example of that this season is Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw has only won 12 games, but his ERA is it even one right now?
It's so down there. It's in Bob Gibson 1968 category as far as just.
If you looked at the win-loss record, you would say, well, Kershaw's he's not having a great year. But I saw him when he lost on Tuesday, pitched a great game.
And you had the catcher's interference, which cost him an unearned run, and he loses the game by one. The other thing is, you could make an argument that he's an MVP candidate because when the team got off to such a slow start, he still was a rock. You know, mm-hmm. we've had excitement with Puig. We've had some late additions and things like that. He's been a rock the whole time. That's very important because the team could have gone bad, and at least once every 5 days when things were going not so well, you still had Kershaw, and Greinke was injured at the time. So he's the type that's the pro. You look at the ERA, you look at the strikeout-to-walk ratio and things like that. He can't necessarily control the record, and that's not who he is. He just wants to do his job, mm-hmm. be the ace, and we're very lucky to have him. And if the team's going to go anywhere in the playoffs – He'll obviously be a big part of it because he's the ace pitcher.
I like you brought up some things during your lecture where you were not going to tell anybody that the playoffs are a lock. And I've been so happy enjoying the Dodgers this season while they're doing well. But I've been very careful and cautiously optimistic to the point where I almost don't want to get happy, don't want to get excited, just because, baseball's a long season. Anything can happen. Injuries can rear their ugly heads. I've seen teams skid in the last month. You talked about it in your lecture. What is it like going to work right now when the Dodgers are in the middle of this incredible run that they've been since mid-June?
For me, I try to have the same routine. I always tell myself Bozo gets to go to the circus, and I try to keep it in perspective like that, because if you work for a team, I think it's very important to just put blinders on and not worry about the standings, because somebody's going to come to the game. It could be the greatest game they ever see. It could be the first time they ever go to a game. It could be very meaningful. It could be, you just never know why fans are coming. It's not necessarily for the pennant race or things like that. People want to spend time at the ballpark. And if you're going to work at the ballpark, it's just like Disneyland or anything else with the public. You still have to have that same routine as far as treating fans, giving them that level of comfort, excitement, expectation, and being a pro. It's easy to jump up and down and cheer when they're winning 10 in a row, but it's a challenge when they're in a losing streak. And I just don't think you should alter your routine. It's the same thing you had talked about, proofreading and things like that. I used to cover big sporting events, whether it's the Super Bowl or playoffs or All-Star games or things like that. The routine doesn't change if you go cover a Little League game or a high school game or anything like that, because still, names spelled are important, accuracy is important, and somebody may not care about the Super Bowl, but if their son is playing in a Little League game, you want that story to be good. And it's the same routine as far as working at a ballpark. You can't control what's going to happen on the field, so you need to worry about what you can control, and that's not only customer service, but also doing the best possible job that you can do every single day, because you just don't know how the movie's going to play out. Yep. They could make the playoffs. They could win 10 in a row. They could lose 10 in a row. Historically, I could support any argument you wanted for them going all the way or for them not going all the way. Yeah. Because along the way, we've had 120 years, and it's like looking at old stock market tables of it going up and going down and up and down. So
I've heard a lot this year. My brother said, you know, when the Dodgers went on the road, they always go to the World Series. You know, and people are kind of making arguments for and against. But I would think that working for the organization, it would be very different, because I guess you do want to fall into that temptation as a fan, because you're obviously a fan and you're not just an employee. But at the same time, I think you said having that routine probably helps you.
And I'm a people person, too. When you're a little kid, you think if you ever worked at a ballpark, oh, I'm going to be able to collect autographs. I'll be able to get, you know, free food and things like that. And what you end up collecting people. And it's the people and it's the stories. And it's not only, I've known some people that were a minor leaguer. They became a big star. Now they're retired. You meet their families. You meet their extended friends and everything like that. You meet just a microcosm of society through a ballpark. The ballpark is where everybody can gather. And so you see people at different stages of their lives. They're either little kids, just excitement and wide-eyed, and they're dreaming, or they may be retired and they're thinking back to the glory days of teams that they saw as far as the 50s and the 60s. Yeah. That's the nice part, because for those 2 hours, those 3 hours, everybody can get together. You won't know what's going to happen in the game, but it's still fun because you can still make noise. You can still throw your peanut shells on the ground. And it's still, the premise is still to go out there and have fun. You could, if the team won every night, but there wasn't any customer service or you didn't enjoy yourself, you wouldn't come. And so that's just as important, the food, the atmosphere, and things like that. Because ultimately you're hopeful for the results, but you just don't know what's going to happen. And that makes it fun, too, in this world of instant information and instant this and instant that. You actually have to be patient and see whether or not they win or not.
Well, the Dodgers are, now there goes somebody alarmed, but the Dodgers actually were the first team this year to cross 3 million in attendance. That happened on Tuesday night, I believe. I was there. And so they're doing something right. And the feeling at the ballpark this year, I went to a few games early on when they weren't doing so well. You know, but with the emergence of Puig and Hanley Ramirez having his incredible run, and Hanley, I think, is the one that's really carried the team really through the streak, but you don't have to agree with me. But it feels like it feels as close to being a kid and going to that park during the height of Fernando Mania. That's the first time I felt that in a long time. Are you now, as a fan, strictly as a fan, someone who's in the park, do you feel that way? Do you feel like it's been a long time since you felt this sort of electricity in the stadium?
It goes in spurts, because don't forget, a couple years ago we had Manny Wood.
That's
and
true.
Manny Ramirez, and suddenly he was suddenly the hot item, and you had people wearing Manny wigs to the ballpark and things like that. And when he came from the Red Sox, he was on such an incredible streak that suddenly that team was dead in the water, and suddenly Manny brought dreadlocks to Los Angeles and excitement and everything like that. And so it all just depends on the winning streak and things like that. You can look at basketball and the Clippers, and they won something like 22 in a row. Suddenly they were out in the first round, and so that's a great cautionary tale as far as you can get caught up in everything. And look at the Miami Heat, that three-pointer that the Spurs coach decided, no, we're not going to foul. We're not going to make it just be a two-pointer and things like that. Sports championships can turn on one little decision,
that
one
is true.
Little moment and things like that.
Now, I guess as a sports writer, you would know, you have that background already. So you're a little bit more, you're very Vin Scully about the whole thing, philosophical.
I can be composed, I can be philosophical, but that doesn't mean that if they score four runs in the bottom of the ninth against Rodney, against the Rays, that's still very exciting. Those moments are so cool, and you just can't help but be a fan in the moment when suddenly you just see somebody make a terrific play. And the thing that goes with it is the roar of the crowd, and you can see the excitement, and that's the fun part, when you can see the excitement on people's faces, and you know, you see the little twinkle in their eye, and suddenly they, well, maybe this could be the year. But you can be very middle of the road like Vin Scully and everything like that, but still, when certain plays happen, you know, when Puig hits a walk-off bomb and then slides into home plate, you know, in extra innings after the team had struck out 20 times and set a record, you can't help but be a fan in those moments, a fan of the moment. You know, you're measured, but you just can't sit there like a robot. If it's something exciting, it's going to get under your skin, and you are going to cheer.
That is fantastic. Mark, I have a question. One question I want to ask you, and I'm sure people are listening now going, ask him this, ask him that. And I wasn't expecting this to happen. Actually, a friend of mine, another Dodger fan, fellow Dodger fan, put it out on Twitter that you were going to be here tonight. And I live about a block away from this library. So I ran down here. I got in. Thankfully, there was still room. I got a Wes Parker card. Thank you so much for that. But one thing I want to ask you, is there anything that you didn't know about the Dodgers that in your capacity as historian that you were able to uncover, and something that you walked away with thinking, wow, I never knew that?
That happens all the time, and that's the great part. There's no way I'd want to sit there and say, oh, I know everything and everything. That number one, it wouldn't be fun, but the other thing is, I'm 48 years old, and the franchise goes back to the 1880s. So it would be silly of me to pretend that I knew everything that happened from 1880 mm-hmm. on. It just makes absolutely no sense. And just the other day, somebody called and said that they had a ticket stub from April the 9th, 1968. But they couldn't understand why they couldn't find out what happened during that game, because they knew it wasn't rained out. We only had one rain out from 62 to 76. And it turns out that the game, along with all the other opening days that week, were postponed because of the funeral for Dr. King. I had no idea. And you had mentioned Wes Parker, and Wes was nice enough to donate some autographed cards for this event. And as far as a ballplayer's memory, Wes not only remembered the opening day being canceled, but he remembered the next day they lost to Chris Short and the Phillies 2-0, but he got a single and a double, and my jaw just dropped as far as, how do you remember that? So not only can you get historical tidbits, but you can still be reminded of the amazing minds that these guys have as far as their memories on the field. It may be 20, 30, 40 years. It's still like a steel trap. You'd said earlier, how do you have this memory? And I think we all remember what we want to remember.
Sure. Sure. Do you have a lot of interaction with players on a day-to-day basis, both current and former?
Not necessarily current, because the current player has no need for the historian, because if you see a historian, that means there's a reminder that the career is going to end. And so I try to stay away from the current players only because it's their time. It's their time to shine. They don't necessarily know how long it's going to last. I know that they can't put perspective on their career, nor would I want them to, because they're in the moment. They're playing. And so more of the Dodger Alumni Association, we keep track of the former players. And that's the fun part, to be able to keep in touch, be able to put players in touch with each other, and still have that connection, whether or not it's John Hale calling for September 15th tickets, former outfielder from 74 to 77, or Steve Garvey, who was on his way to Atlanta, but he came to the game a couple days ago, and I had reminded him it was coming up on the anniversary of his 5-for-5, two home runs, three doubles, including a grand slam in an 11-0 win against the Cardinals. And he looked at me with a funny look on his face, and he said, "I should put that on Twitter."
Do you have a favorite Dodger memory yourself?
It has to be when I was a kid. My favorite player was Jimmy Winn. September the 15th, 1974, Dodgers are in a battle with the Reds. Seventh inning, and Jimmy hit a grand slam against Pedro Borbón. And just the roar of the crowd, that's something that I just never forgot. It's like in Pride of the Yankees when the kid's sitting in the hospital bed and Lou Gehrig promises him two home runs. You can see this amazed look on the kid's face. That's probably the way I look, because my favorite player hits a home run in that moment. Flash ahead 39 years, Jimmy will still call. He lives in Houston. He's a friend, and that's the fun part, when you can still have that connection. You know, we all get older, and our roles may change, but the link is still there. He's still my favorite player.
That's fantastic. Now, let me ask you a question. Who tells better stories, Tommy Lasorda or Vin Scully?
Well, Vinny, when he does a broadcast, at the end of the broadcast, he leaves 98% of his research unused.
Wow.
And that's his secret. He basically just uses, in the broadcast, you'd only hear like 2%. That's all he uses. And
that's amazing.
That's the genius of him. He's ready for anything, and it's just, it's a little of this and a little of that, but he's not going to bombard you. And Tommy's an amazing storyteller. Tommy is just he's lived it. He's a great motivator. Even now at 85, he'll yell at the TV if he doesn't like the strategy or things like that. And that's what you find out. If you had just taken Tommy's name off, done his speeches and things like that, you'd find that it's a business book, because it's the same thing as far as motivating people. He said the key to managing, it's like holding a bird. If you hold it too tight, you crush it. If you hold it too loose, it flies away. So all this bluster and all this bleeding blue and all this stuff, his big job was to motivate the players. And he said, "I may have not liked a player, but I never let personal feelings get in the way of a team." He wouldn't bench a player if he didn't like him, because if that player was the best person for the job, he'd still play him. And that was the genius of Tommy. You had to win, you had to win, you had to win. Because as a major leaguer, he had an 0-4 record. He was always being told, "You can't do this, you can't do that." A couple of years ago, I found on eBay his high school yearbook. And
wow.
I knew that he hadn't seen it, because there was this team picture and this young Tom Lasorda in the first row. And for 30 seconds, he didn't say anything. And I knew at that point he hadn't seen it. And finally, he pointed to the older gentleman and said, "That's the guy that didn't play me." And he was talking about his coach. And so that's how I knew. But even after all these years, that competitive drive, Tommy still has it.
That's amazing. Mark, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you so much. You stayed an extra, I said 5 minutes. You've actually stayed 20 minutes, and I really appreciate you. You're very gracious. And from one Dodger fan to another, I don't even want to, I'm not even going to say anything about this season, but please keep doing the great job that you're doing. I'll be sure to plug your books and everything on my podcast. Do you have any other thoughts you want to leave our listeners, most of whom, I have some Angel fans who are listening, God bless them. But most of my, I think my most of my fan base are Dodger fans. Do you have any other final thoughts or a last story you want to?
I don't mind who you root for. If you root for the Giants, if you root for the Angels, the best part is just life at the ballpark, because early in the morning, they're getting the field ready and it kind of looks like the golf course at 6 a.m. and suddenly it just kind of comes alive. And every game is unique. It's kind of like a snowflake, and that's what makes it so great, because we can't predict what's going to happen. And you could see a bad game, you could see a classic, you could see a perfect game. And that's what makes it fun. I've always looked forward to going to the ballpark, whether as a kid, whether as a reporter. And in my capacity with the Dodgers, this is my 20th year. And I know if I ever have that feeling that I don't look forward to going to the ballpark, then that's fine. I'll just say thank you very much. It's been a wonderful ride. But knock on wood, I've never had that feeling. And I don't think I ever will. There's just something about life at the ballpark. It just teaches you about life and sportsmanship and camaraderie. And I just can't say enough about that. And so I'm very appreciative for having a stadium nearby, for the Dodger organization, for the people that I've been able to meet. And I just feel very grateful. So that's what I'd like to convey.
Mark, thank you so much. And I know that Vin is does not know what Twitter is, so I doubt he knows what a podcast is. But you let him know that if he ever wants to jump into the world of podcasting, we're here ready for him and ready to have him on as a guest. But until then, this is you have been by far my biggest get, quote unquote. And I'm glad that you're doing the job that you're doing. You're doing a wonderful job. And thank you so much for spending your time with us.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been fun.
There you have it, guys. That was the interview. I am one happy individual, one happy Dodgers fan. Again, guys, thank you for listening. As always, again, don't forget our trivia contest. What number did Vin Scully wear at Fordham University? That is the question. Posted on our Facebook page underneath the picture of Mr. Langille, and you will win a, unfortunately, it's not autographed, but it is a free copy, it's shrink wrapped and everything, of the Dodger Stadium 50th anniversary scrapbook. Thanks, guys. And as always, our sign off is this transmission ends now. Think blue.